This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
Damon Runyon Theater. Once again, the Damon Runyon Theater brings you another story by the master of storytellers, Damon Runyon. And this one, The Lemon Drop Kid. And to tell it to you, here is Broadway.
Thanks. The other day, I run into Regret, the horse player. And he tells me that he runs into the Lemon Drop Kid, and the kid sends regards to me. It is a long time since I see the kid, maybe a year. It is that long since the night in Mindy's when... But that is getting ahead of the story of the Lemon Drop Kid, one that is more than somewhat full of what the Broadway critics like to call human drama. If you like, I will tell it to you in a minute.
And now, back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, The Lemon Drop Kid.
I am going to take you back a matter of 4 or 5 years to an August afternoon and the racetrack at Saratoga, which is a spot in New York State very pleasant to behold, and also to a young guy by the name of Lemon Drop Kid, who is called the Lemon Drop Kid because he always has a little sack of lemon drops in the side pocket of his coat and is always munching at same. Now, the Lemon Drop Kid's business is telling a tale, which means he will spot somebody at the racetrack and give them a tip, for which he expects to be cut in on the lettuce when it is gathered. On this day, the kid and I are standing at the rail. The kid is looking gloomy. Finally, he turns to me and says as follows.
Broadway, have you ever been broke?
Oh, at times the condition with me is somewhat of a chronic disease.
It is with me now.
You?
Uh-huh. I have no place to live.
But you are living at that boarding house, are you not?
I am not. The landlady made derogatory remarks about my lack of funds. Got so I could not enjoy my meals, especially since they were very bad meals to start with.
Then what are you doing here at the racetrack?
I thought maybe I could tell a tale and pick up some scratch in that manner.
You mean you have a horse that looks good?
No, but I... Broadway.
Yeah?
Hey, look, there he comes again.
There who comes again where?
See an old man in the wheelchair?
Sure.
Well, every day he comes here. He's always pushed up where he can see the race.
You know who that is, kid?
I do not.
Rarus P. Grigsby.
The name is familiar.
It should be. Rarus P. Grigsby has more potatoes than Idaho. And with these potatoes, he is closer than the next second.
How do you like that? Here I am, broke. There he is with more dough than he knows what to do with. And what fun does he have?
It seems to me that a few evenings at home counting a few dollars at a time is a more than somewhat entertaining pastime.
Nah, look how sour he looks.
Well, being tied to that chair is no fun.
I guess so. I feel sorry for him.
Sure.
Tell you what, let's go over and talk to him.
Talk to Rarus P. Grigsby? Kid, you are more than somewhat silly.
Well, come on, let's see. He looks lumps.
Okay, okay. But do not say I do not warn you.
Besides, maybe I can tell him a tale.
Oh, he never bets.
Why does he come here?
Just to see the horses.
Okay, watch me cheer him up. Hiya, Buster.
Huh? Were you addressing me, young man?
Sure. Say, you got gout?
Go away.
Nice day, huh? What?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, why not?
Because I don't wish to talk. Now go away before I have my man call the police.
I do something wrong?
Will you please go?
Why are you in that wheelchair?
Arthritis. Now go away.
Arthritis? Say, I had that once. No more, though.
Huh? You had it?
Sure. Know what cured it?
It can't cure mine.
You never tried.
Young man, I spent thousands on doctors, and I've offered $5,000 to anyone who will cure me.
Okay, so look at you. Ever try this stuff?
Yeah. What is it?
Medicine I took.
Ah.
Here, try one.
Right. What is it?
Look, if you're afraid, I'll eat one first. See? Mm. Can't hurt. Might do you some good.
Let me have it.
Hey, yeah.
Well, it tastes like lemon drops.
Sure, I have to disguise the taste of the medicine. What's so funny?
You are.
Maybe. By the way, give you something good in the fifth.
I never bet.
Ever try?
No.
Well, why not this time? You can't lose. I got it straight
from the horse's mouth.
No, I can't reveal the source of my information.
You're an engaging young rapscallion. What's the name of this horse?
Watch number two.
Number two, eh?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I know what you want. Here, take this $100. Bet it on the horse.
Sure. So long, Buster.
And I am flabbergasted because I know the kid does not know what horses are running in the field. But the kid just smiles and walks away from me. He is gone maybe 10 minutes. Then he comes back. And he is smiling more than somewhat, as he says, as follows.
Hey, Broadway, I found out that horse number two is an old walrus by the name of Sunshine. And he could not win even against a field of mud turtles.
And you are going to bet that C-note on him?
No.
But
Sunshine
you...
will lose. Mr. Grigsby will not miss the C-note. He has many, many more. Besides, I made him laugh. I figure he owes me something for that. Now, come on. We'll watch the race. And maybe in the sixth, we'll put down a bet.
Oh, there's postcard.
There's Sunshine coming out of the paddock. Broadway, he is a sorry-looking walrus.
Nevertheless, I see walruses do funny things.
Don't borrow trouble.
I have plenty without dipping into the bag for more.
Sunshine will lose.
But Sunshine wins. Probably because he is running against a field of mud turtles that are not in shape. And the price is 20 to 1, which means Rare as P. Grigsby wins 2,000. Now, at this point, it seems the Lemon Drop Kid should be hard to catch. But he does not run away. He is funny that way, because he figures Mr. Grigsby should be told why the tip does not stand up. So I stand back when the kid says to him,
"Well, what do you say?"
"Say, say." That's the most fun I've had in years. I'll give you a liberal reward, young man.
That's generous of you, Mr. Grigsby.
Well, where's the money?
Money? What money?
Why, the money I won.
Well, Mr. Grigsby, why are you under the impression that you won?
Huh? What did you say?
You did not win. We lost on that race.
We what? Well, young man, you... Horse number two won that race.
Sure, horse number two won. It is a matter of history now.
Then where is the money?
Mr. Grigsby, I think you misunderstood me. I meant that horse number two was the horse to watch against ours.
You,
remember? I said watch number two.
You crook! You young thief! You swindler! Police! Detectives! Police! Help!
Now, take it easy, Mr. Grigsby. Your condition...
Confound my condition! I'll throttle you with my own hands. I'll tear you in half. Why, you thief! You crook!
Goodbye, Mr. Grigsby. It's been very nice knowing
you. You come back here! Get him! Stop him! I'll have you hunted down and found if it takes every remaining day of my life!
Is that the Lemon Drop Kid takes off with every gendarme and detective in the track at his heels. But he's a very fast runner. He leaves the track under a good head of steam and does not stop until there are several miles between him and the nearest competitor. He stops only when he comes to a little town named Kibbsville. Now, the rest of the story I do not see in person, but I hear it later from the kid. And it goes as follows.
Would that be all, sir?
Yes, thanks. Goodbye.
Goodbye, sir.
Say, I wonder if you could give me a drink of water.
Oh, you scared me. Didn't see you come up.
Sorry, but I'm kind of dry.
You been running?
Yeah. I was entered in the last race and lost direction.
You want some ice water?
Any kind. Thanks.
Well, why don't you sit down? I'll bring it to you. Here, sit on this stool in the shade.
Oh, thanks. It's your gas station?
It's my father's. I take care of it. Here you are.
Oh, thanks.
Uh-uh. Drink it slower. That's better.
Yeah.
Why were you running?
Exercise. Do it all the time.
Were you running away from something?
Nah. So you got change for $100 bill?
For $100? No. Hmm.
Business good here?
Sometimes. Not much traffic comes down here.
Hmm. You say, you mind this place all by yourself?
Well, my father helps.
Well, where is he?
He's in the house. All I have to do is call for him.
You scared of me? Well, don't worry. I'm not a stick-up man.
I didn't say you were. You don't look like one.
No? What do I look like?
Like a nice young man.
Nice young man, huh?
Yes, why?
Oh, nothing. Well, okay, thanks for the water. I'll be on my way.
You're welcome. Oh, were you at Saratoga?
Why?
I was just wondering what the girls there were wearing. You know, their hats, dresses, suits.
Get out much, do you?
Oh, yes, sometimes.
Sure.
Was it pretty there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Lots of dolls.
Dolls?
Dames, girls.
Were they pretty?
Pretty? Yeah. Yeah, I guess they were.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Maybe because I never seen a doll. Girl like you before.
Well, the upshot of the matter is that the Lemon Drop Kid falls for this doll, who is named Alicia Deering. He does not stay one day or 2 days or even three, but more than a week passes, and he is still hanging around the town. And maybe it is a good thing because the gendarmes are still nosing around for him, but they do not think to look in Kibbsville. Then one night, he is sitting with Alicia, and the scene is as follows.
What are you thinking about?
Hmm? Oh, I don't know. Maybe about all this?
Oh. I heard something in town today.
So? What?
I heard that the police at the racetrack were looking for somebody.
They're always looking for somebody.
This was a special somebody. He likes lemon drops.
Lots of people do.
I know, that's what I said.
You... That's what you said?
Yes.
You hear why they're looking for this somebody?
Yes. He was dishonest.
Uh-huh.
But they don't think he stopped here in Kibbsville. I don't either.
See. Alicia.
What?
Look, you don't know anything about me except that I like lemon drops. But I... This is the first time I ever loved anybody or anything in my life. It's different. I like it.
So do I.
I like this place. It's quiet. It's different. I'd like to stay here.
I wish you would.
You mean that?
Uh-huh.
I don't know how to do anything but tout a horse or pull a phony deal. But I'd like to try.
Starting now?
Starting as of the first day I saw you.
And that is how the Lemon Drop Kid proposes and is accepted. What comes later is quite a story, which I will tell you about in a minute.
And now, back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, The Lemon Drop Kid.
So it happens that the kid stays in Kibbsville. Now, it turns out that he and Alicia are very much in love. But, as they say, there is a large fly in the ointment. Naturally, the kid has to tell the doll's father. And the scene is as follows.
So you want to marry Alicia?
Yeah, that's the idea.
On what?
Well, I got a few bucks. 100.
How long will that last?
I don't know.
You ain't got a job.
Well, not yet.
Looky here, I ain't able to work hard, and now you're going to take Alicia away from me.
Well, I got that figured out, too. I can work at the station.
You. Look at you. I know your kind. I've seen a lot of you come and go.
Well, I'm figuring on staying.
Maybe you'll want a salary, too.
Well, we've got to live.
I'll give you $10 a week.
Huh? Oh, you're kidding.
$10. And you and Alicia can live in the back.
Gee, I figured on a place of our own.
On what?
You know, I can't figure you. Her father. Seems to me you wouldn't want to see her happy.
You're taking her away from me, ain't you?
Okay. $10 a week. You know...
What?
I was just thinking.
What about?
$10. That used to be a pretty good price. For a necktie.
Kid, is that you?
Yeah, it's me. I gotta look in a mirror to make sure.
Oh, you're tired.
Yeah, I guess. 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Long hours for short pay.
For 8 months.
Yeah, for 8 months.
Want a glass of milk?
Nah.
I'm sorry, kid.
I'll forget it. Alicia.
What, kid?
We gotta get out of here. You and me, we gotta get out of here.
You wanna leave?
Well, why not? What do we got here? $10 a week in one room.
It's not much, is it?
Much.
I see.
Well, I... Oh, look, baby, honey, I didn't mean that for you. Well, I'd cut my arm off if you passed me the sign to do it. Oh, honey, I'm sorry.
I know. Oh, kid, I love you so much.
Double that in spades for me, honey. Look, I had $100 when I came here. I've been getting 10 a week. We put some away. Maybe we can make a start someplace else.
I don't want to go away, kid.
But you said you loved me.
And I do. I'd go any place with you, darling, any place. But not now.
Why not? Why not?
Not now, kid.
Alicia.
Oh, kid. Kid, I'm glad of you.
Glad? Glad? Look at me. Everybody in the world, look at me. The lemon drop kid who never had anything or anybody to love before in his life. Now I got the whole world. The whole world. Me. Me with a kid of my own.
Sure, that is it. Well, the weeks go by fast. Then Alicia is not doing so well. And the lemon drop kid is like a limp rag. And one night, the scene is as follows.
You can come in now.
Okay, Doc. She doing all right?
Well, no.
What's the matter?
Call it complications, Mr. Deering.
Let me in there.
Kid.
Hello, baby. Feeling better?
Yes.
Sure you are.
Everything all right?
Couldn't be better.
And Dad?
He's fine.
You'd better let her get some rest now.
Okay, Doc, right away. I'll be right outside, honey, in case you need anything.
All right, kid. Don't worry.
I've got to talk to you.
Yeah? What's the matter, Doc?
She needs a specialist.
Specialist? She's worse than you let on.
I'm sorry, but I've done all I can. She needs a specialist. Badly.
Badly?
That's right.
Where from?
Well, there's one in New York City. It's rather expensive.
Never mind that. Give me his name and address.
I've got it here for you. Here you are.
Okay, thanks, Doc.
I'll drop by again in an hour.
Yeah.
Specialists cost a lot of money.
Uh-huh. Look out.
You got that kind of money?
We got $150. We saved it.
Kid...
Get it right here. It's gone. It was right here, and it's gone.
Look, kid, there was something I wanted to...
Where's that dough? Where is it?
Look, with one thing and another, the station not doing well...
You took it.
I had to pay off some bills. I never thought you'd need it like
this. You took it. Why?
It
I had debts. You wasn't needing the money when I took it. I was going to put it back as soon as I could.
I'm going to kill you. You're her father, but I'm going to kill you.
Kid.
I broke my back for that dough.
You got it by stealing in the first place.
I ain't thinking of that now. All I'm thinking of is her. Oh, you dirty little...
Kid, let go, please. Let go. I didn't mean to get let go. Kid!
Honey. Honey, what are you doing out here?
Alicia, don't let him go.
Kid, he didn't mean anything. He didn't.
Honey, you got to get back to bed.
Please let him alone, kid. Promise me.
All right.
Help me. Help me,
darling. Alicia.
Well, the kid figures the only way he can get money and get it fast is to try the races. So he starts out for Saratoga. But on the way, he learns that Grigsby is still hot to get his hands on him, so the kid does not go to the track. But it seems that same night, a masked bandit holds up an all-night restaurant and gets away with a whole take in the place, which amounts to considerable. And it so happens that the next morning, the kid shows up at his and Alicia's home.
Who's that? Oh, it's you.
Yeah, me. Doc, how is she? I can get her to New York now. What are you looking at me like that for?
Kid, I...
Doc, she's...
No, not yet. But your baby. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
You better go into her. You've still got a little time.
Sleeping, honey?
Kid, is that you?
It's me.
I've been waiting for you, kid. Just waiting.
I got a little delayed. But I got the money, baby.
Baby.
Oh, no, don't, honey. Please don't. Look, you're going to be okay.
Promise me something.
Sure, anything.
Will you take care of Dad?
We'll both do it, baby. Both of us.
He's not bad. He just doesn't think. Take care of him.
All right.
I'm sorry, kid. I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'd better go in now.
You don't have to, Doc.
Oh, I'm sorry. If we could have taken her to New York 12 hours ago. Just 12 hours.
12 hours. I was busy 12 hours ago. Getting some money.
Oh. Well, I'll be going. By the way, there's someone on the porch to see you.
Me?
Yes. Come on, I'll walk out with you.
I don't want to see anybody.
I think you'd better come.
Thanks, Doc.
It's all right, Sheriff. Goodbye, kid. Goodbye, Sheriff.
Kid, I've got to ask you some questions about last night.
12 hours ago.
That's right. We found this spigot wrapped in tin foil. Looks mighty like a gun.
Yeah, it does.
Somebody used it to hold up an all-night restaurant a good piece from here.
Uh-huh.
And that somebody was a... man who took a lemon drop from his pocket and ate it while he was doing the holdup.
Know why the guy did it?
I think so. But the law is funny that way. It don't ask a man's reasons lots of times, kid. It just goes ahead and does its duty. Guess we better go, kid.
So the kid is sent to Auburn to do 2 years. And all the while he's there, he sends money to Alicia's father. Money he gets by selling knickknacks to visitors. And then he gets out. And his hair is kind of splashed with gray. And there are lines on his face. Now, this is still not the end of the story. The payoff is big. And I will tell you about it in a minute.
Thank you.
are sitting in Mindy's. The kid is with us. He is out of Auburn maybe 3 days. He does not talk much, just sits there. And then there is a commotion, and the scene is as follows.
There he is. There he is at last. That's the man.
Kid, look, Grigsby.
Yeah, I see him.
Beat it, kid, beat it.
What for?
Ah, there you are. There you are. I finally chased you down.
Congratulations.
It took me a long time, but I swore I'd find you. You see, I'm walking. I'm no longer in my wheelchair. Well, what do you say to that?
Again, congratulations.
To you, too. I'm giving you a check for $4,900. I offered $5,000 to anyone who could get me out of that chair. Ha ha, lemon drops. Bah, I forgot all about my arthritis. All my doctors say it was they who did it, but I know better. Well, you made me so furious that I got up and ran, and I haven't been in that... Well, what's the matter with you?
You were in Saratoga maybe 2 years ago?
Yes, why?
I could have had this check then.
Yes, it's minus the $100 you cheated me out of, but there it is. It's a good joke, isn't it?
Yeah, great. Look, if I put my name on this check...
Endorse it?
That's it. If I do that, can I send it to anyone and could he cash it?
Well, the check's as good as gold, young man.
Okay. Okay, I'll endorse it. You send it to a man named Henry Deering. Kibbsville, New York.
Kid, what is this you're doing?
Keeping a promise, Broadway. Always do that. It's better for everybody.
Where are you going?
I am out of lemon drops, Broadway. All out.
And so ends the famous Damon Runyon story, The Lemon Drop Kid. Listen in again next week to... The Damon Runyon Theater. The Damon Runyon Theater with John Brown as Broadway is directed by Richard Sandville and the stories adapted for radio by Russell Hughes. This is a Mayfair production.
Truth is stranger than fiction. This is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not. Mosquitoes prefer blondes, but they're female mosquitoes, the only ones who bite, and they consider the skin of a blonde less resistant, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the man who couldn't sleep. Armand Jacques Lerbet of Paris suffered a terrible affliction. He couldn't sleep. As a child during the French Revolution, Lerbet had an accident. An observation stand collapsed, damaging his brain. Rushed to the hospital, he ultimately recovered, but couldn't close his eyes. His condition lasted all through life, 71 years, yet he became a great lawyer, widely known as the legal light that is never extinguished, believe it or not.
This is the NBC University Theater, presenting another in our series of radio plays based on the world's great stories. Tonight, the George Du Maurier novel, Peter Ibbetson, starring Joseph Schildkraut. The story of Peter Ibbetson by George Du Maurier was first published in 1891. There are those living who can remember when it first cast its spell, a spell which still holds. It was a book for those who love to dream and those who dream of love, and a book, above all, for those who share love's dream. And yet, our story begins in the gloom of a cell in an asylum for the criminally insane.
the light of a feeble lamp, the gaunt figure of a man lies dead. His hair is white. His face is pale from long imprisonment. But on his face is the look of one who sleeps with pleasant dreams. On the desk beside him is a fading letter, an envelope that contains some crumbling violets, and the clear pages of a manuscript in which he had written...
If at the time this manuscript is read, anyone remembers me, it is most certainly with pity or with scorn. Yet of all who ever lived on this earth, I have been perhaps the happiest. To tell you how this came about, I must begin long ago. Although I'm English and I'm called Peter Ibbotson, from the time I was 5 till I was 12 years old, I lived in Paris, in a place called Passy-les-Paris. I remember the winding flagstone street lined with chestnut trees and the oil lamps alight at dusk. There was the flowering garden with the ivy-covered wall and the rose-trellised gate. And there was the park, a wonderland of tanglewood, with a little lake brimming with the blue of the summer sky. And there was Mimsy. Yes. There was Mimsy, the sad, pale little girl who lived beyond the garden gate, too weak to run and play with the rest of us.
Go-go. Go-go, are you going to the lake in the woods?
Yes, Mimsy. See, I have a boat. A boat that sails.
It's a pretty one. The prettiest I ever saw.
You can come, too. But hurry up.
No, Go-Go. It's too far. I can't keep up with you.
Too far? Oh, no. I can carry you on my shoulders if you get tired.
Oh, would you, Go-Go? And will your boat sail to Africa? To India? To America?
Of course it will. We can sail it anywhere.
Yes, I guess we can. If we pretend hard enough.
In the wintertime, we sat in the chimney corner and roasted chestnuts while we watched the fire. And I read, with Mimsy looking over my shoulder, her favorite verse about the waterfowl.
He who from zone to zone guides through the boundless sky thy certain flight,
in the long way that I must tread alone, will lead my steps aright.
And sometimes we heard my mother play the harp, as lightly as the snowflakes dancing in the early winter dusk.
Frère Jacques, dormez-vous, dormez-vous.
Sonne les matines,
ding, ding, dong,
ding, ding, dong.
And then my mother's harp drifted off into a world of shadows as gentle and friendly as those that flickered from the hearth. Passy-les-Paris was many things to a little boy. Games to play and Mimsy's pale face and solemn eyes. My mother's gentle voice and a home so safe and warm. And the little lake in the woods so calm and so quiet. But the days in Paris ended.
Go-Go? What kind of a name is that for a boy?
That is what they've always called me, Colonel Ibbotson.
You may call me Uncle if you like. Of course, I'm only a cousin of your mother's. But I understand that you left quite alone in the world.
Yes. Yes, Uncle.
It's a good thing your mother wrote to me before she died.
Are we going to go home soon, Uncle Ibbotson?
Presently, my boy, presently. Then we'll have to see about a school. A good school, where they'll teach you some real discipline.
I never knew quite why Colonel Ibbotson wanted to take care of me after my father was killed in an accident and my mother died of the shock soon afterward. At any rate, he sent me off to school, the dark and gloomy Blue Friars School, for 6 long years.
I suppose you were allowed to daydream in class when you went to school in France, Master Ibbotson. Or perhaps this ruler on your knuckles will help to wake you up.
Oh! I say, you fellows, come along to my diggings. I've got a treat from home.
They've sent you another treat already? Why, it's no time since the last one.
Maybe you'd best stay out of this, Ibbotson. You never share a treat.
Well, I would if I got one.
After 6 years, when I was 18, I joined Uncle Ibbotson at Hampshire Hall. But there things were even worse. The colonel hated the thought that I was taller and stronger than he was, that I had ideas of my own, and that I had a standard apart from his.
I should have known better than to take you in. You're your father's son, all right.
And proud of it, Colonel Ibbotson.
What's there to be proud of? He left you a penniless whelp, didn't he? If your mother hadn't been a fool, she'd never have married him.
I think that I'll be leaving now.
Oh, no, you won't. Not after all I've done.
You've done more than enough and said more than enough out of your foul mouth and mind.
What?
Now stand aside.
I'll show you. Take that.
I'll not bother to hit you back. It's worth a slap to me to get out of this.
You're a coward.
Stand aside. For if I ever do strike you, you'll never insult anyone again.
Huh? Well, good riddance then. But I'll square accounts with you.
After that, I went to London and was apprenticed to an architect. I did well in my work, but I was miserable and I was lonely. A few more years went by, and gradually I realized what I had longed for. I arranged a vacation, took my savings, and sailed to France, to Paris. I walked the once familiar streets, and my heart cried for the past. Memory. Memory is not enough when one seeks the touch of a vanished hand, the sound of a voice that is still, the tender grace of a day that is dead. And so I sat on the terrace of a small cafe and wished to God that I had never come. And then a gay open carriage clattered down the road and stopped. Two ladies and their escorts made their way to the terrace, and I found myself staring, spellbound, at one of them. For suddenly it seemed that her loveliness was what I had been seeking, that her eyes, her smile, held the wonder of the long ago. After she was gone, I inquired about her. I was told that she was no less than the Duchess of Towers. Never was a room more lonely than my room that night. As I went to sleep, visions of the past flashed before me, and then I dreamed. I dreamed I stood by a little lake in the woods, and there were children running about at play, but no, they weren't the children I'd known. No, they were evil, misshapen little dwarfs that jeered at me, and then they picked up stones. I turned to run to the avenue gate to escape, and there stood the Duchess of Towers, smiling.
Don't run away, and don't be frightened.
No, something is wrong. Please, I must get away from here.
No, nothing's wrong, except that you're not dreaming true.
What? Not dreaming true?
Yes. Give me your hand. See? Those little people don't exist.
Yes. Yes, they've gone away. Please don't let go of my hand.
Now I can see everything just as it was.
Of course you can. You're dreaming true because you have my hand. But you must try by yourself. Try hard.
Yes. Yes, I'll try hard. That's strange. It's winter now instead of spring. And look, look. There. There in the chimney corner.
He who from zone to zone guides through the boundless sky thy certain flight.
In the long way that I must tread alone will lead my steps.
My father taught me to dream true, and it's easy if you never cease to think of where you want to be until you're asleep. You see, you must join the dream onto reality, and you must never forget in your dream where and what you were when awake.
Frère Jacques, Frère Jacques, dormez-vous, dormez-vous.
Sonne le mattine,
ding, dang, dong,
ding, dang,
dong. I must go now.
No.
But will you remember to dream true?
I'll try, but I don't know without your help.
Whenever you come here, you will be safe. For you too must be a part of my dream, and I am glad to have you come. But I must leave you now, and so... goodbye.
I awakened in my room, and I remembered every detail of my dream. Or was it a dream? For I had known just who I was, and it had all been real. And so was the Duchess of Towers, so very real. Why, I still could feel the touch of a hand on mine. Well... my vacation ended, and I returned to London and to my occupation. And then one day I was summoned to the home of Mrs. Dean to consult her about some plans for remodeling her home. She was holding a party that night, and I was asked to stay. It's very kind of you to ask me to join your party, Mrs. Dean. After all, I'm practically a total stranger to you.
Oh, you're not quite a stranger to me. You see, I knew Colonel Ibbotson once.
Colonel Ibbotson? I'm sorry, Mrs. Dean, but...
yes, yes, I knew him once. That is, I know him now, but we were friends at one time.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Dean. I must tell you that if you wish to speak of Colonel Ibbotson as a friend, you should speak to someone else.
You've answered the question I hardly knew how to ask. I wanted to know how you felt toward him.
I despise him, Mrs. Dean. I despise him from the bottom of my heart.
That is all I need to know just now. I'll only say that I loathe him. Loathe him with reason. Someday, perhaps, I'll tell you more. Oh, but not now. This is a party. There is someone I want you to meet. The Duchess of Towers is here.
The Duchess of Towers? No, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I couldn't.
No,
really.
You mustn't be so shy, so modest. She asked about you.
She asked? All right. Thank you very much. I'll be very happy to meet her.
It may seem strange or even forward, Mr. Ibbotson, but when I saw you tonight, it seemed that I had seen you before. You remind me of a little French boy I used to know when I was a girl in France.
But I was a little French boy once, Your Grace. My name was changed to Peter Ibbotson when I came to England. Once I was called Gogo Pasquier.
Gogo! Gogo, do you remember Mimsy? You used to carry me on your back.
Mims? Poor... pale little Mimsy, and now so beautiful. Why, this is almost as strange as the dream I had. I mean, strange in the same way that it's so real. You see, I dreamed that I was back in Passy, and everything was as it was before. You understand? You were there, and you saw Gogo and Mimsy.
Gogo and Mimsy?
Yes.
I thought it was all my dream, but it was your dream, too.
Why, dream.
our dream together.
I must go now.
No, please.
It's all too strange. I don't know what to think. And I don't know if I shall ever meet you again.
Please, please stay. You must...
No, I can't. Someday perhaps I'll write. But no, I can only say goodbye. And wherever you go, may heaven bless you.
After that, in my outer life, I sought for her in vain. But in my inner life, I dreamed the true dreams that had become the only reality to me. But even in dreams, I couldn't find her. I couldn't find her. Perhaps a year went by, and again I was summoned by Mrs. Dean.
Mr. Riverson, I hope that I would never have to tell you this, for it is not pleasant to tell and will be not pleasant for you to hear.
And I suppose that it's something about Colonel Ibbotson?
I told you once that I had been a friend of his, perhaps more than a friend. When I broke off with him, he never forgave me.
Yes, that would be like him.
Now that I've been happily married to another, he threatens me with all kinds of evil gossip.
Yes, Mrs. Dean, that would be like him, too.
He wrote me a letter once, which I have kept for you.
Is that the letter? May I see it, please?
In it, he boasted to me that he took you in, not as an orphan, but his own son.
His son? But why? I mean, why should he do such a thing?
I think he loved your mother once.
My...
Just as he would now hurt me, he would hurt her. Hurt even her memory. Hurt her through you.
My mother... It's difficult to believe that a man could be so evil.
Perhaps you could warn him. Put a stop to all this.
Yes, you're quite right. The letter here bears out just what you say. With your permission, Mrs. Dean, I will take this letter with me.
Well, well, my Apollo of the T-Square. I'm surprised to see you here.
I have come to ask you why you lie about my mother. Why you say I'm your son?
What? Who says that? It's a lie.
It is not a lie, and stay away from that door. This is a rather heavy cane I have.
Of course it's a lie. Something made up by a spiteful mistress.
She was never your mistress, any more than my mother was. It's not a lie, and I have a letter here to prove it.
Come, come, my boy. You're quite beside yourself.
Now look here. I want a letter from you in which you admit that you're a braggart and a liar.
I'll give you no such letter. But I'll give you this.
Put down that knife.
I'll put it down your throat. You'll not make a fool of me.
This, you...
No,
kill.
No.
The cane crashed on his skull again and again, even after the knife he had seized from a desk was dropped from his lifeless hand. My trial, I would not, I could not tell just why I had killed him. It was a nightmare of words, and at last the judge in his black cap sentencing my execution. The hours were filled with nightmares until the last day came, the last night, and then, reconciled to hopelessness, I fell asleep in my prison cell. I walked along the old avenue and through the woods. I spoke to old familiar faces to tell them of my trouble, but they couldn't hear me. And then I stood beside the little lake.
Oh, Peter, I've been waiting and waiting for you night after night.
Mimsy, I dared not even dream of finding you here.
I almost came to see you at the prison. If you had not come, I would have come to see you there.
Mimsy, I swear... I never meant to take a life, even such a miserable one.
I know that is true. I know. But I have this to tell you. Your sentence will be commuted to imprisonment. I saw the Home Secretary this afternoon.
No, not imprisonment.
But wait, you do not understand. I have been in a prison, too, these past years. But now the Duke of Towers and I are to be separated, I'll be free.
Free? Mimsy, then you'll be free to love someone more worthy.
Oh, no, listen to me, Peter, for I must go. Tomorrow morning in your cell, you will receive a letter from me. And Do you see those violets by the bank of the lake?
Violets, yes. Of course, I see them.
I will send you violets in token of the times we shall share by our lake in dreams to come. Will that convince you?
Just your saying so is enough for me. There is no prison that can hold the dream. I know now that we shall soon be here again, Mimsy, and I shall count the hours. I awoke in my cell, and in the morning there was a message that my sentence had been changed to life imprisonment, as Mimsy had told me in our dream. And there was a letter. A letter containing violets. There was no sadness in my heart as I began to serve the days of my sentence. No sadness at all, for the night must fall after every day. And so it was that I, a convict in a cell for life, lived in the hours of sleep a life of such happiness that the daytime meant nothing, for Mimsy and I were together each night in our dreams. 25 years passed by, but then one night, and the dream was true, there was no Mimsy. I dreamed again, but the door of our little house was closed. There was no Mimsy to open it. Mimsy, she was gone. Lost. Forever. Lost, and with her my mind and my soul.
This man is insane, Warden, and it's my opinion that he's dangerous. There's nothing to do but send him to the asylum.
I'm sorry, Peter. Peter, do you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, Warden, it makes no difference. She's dead. Mimsy's dead.
Mimsy? Who do you mean by Mimsy?
Mimsy. Mary. The Duchess of Towers.
The Duchess of Towers?
Yes.
Why, yes. Yes, she is dead. It's just been reported in the papers.
I lost all wish to dream, and I lived as other men. No, not as other men, but as a man gone mad. I weakened myself by starvation. And then in my exhaustion, I slept. I slept and I dreamed. I walked by the little lake in the woods. The water was calm and quiet. I looked at it and suddenly an idea came into my mind. For down there, in its depths, was peace. And then a figure came along the path, deep out of the shadow of the woods.
Peter, go, at last you've come. I knew you would.
Mary. Mimsy, is it you? You're so different, I hardly know you.
Yes, Peter, you've changed too. Before, we were always young, as we were when our dreams first met. But now all that is over. You are old, and my life on earth is done. I can stay only a little while. I have come such a long way, and I must return.
Please, you must tell me what to do.
Wait a little while.
Wait?
That is all I can tell you. There is a moment when we shall meet and be inseparable forever. But you must not hurry that moment. Time is nothing, but it must not be destroyed.
Mary, don't go away from me again.
Yes, I must. But my spirit will always be here with you. Come here to rest and to remember when your body sleeps. And now, kiss me goodbye for a little while.
Mimsy.
Time is nothing, but I shall count the hours till I see you again.
I have written this down for you to read when I'm gone. I have gone back to the little lake night after night, in the lovely spring and in the autumn sunshine, to take dream notes to be learned by the spirit. And now I can't.
Peter, Gogo, why are you waiting? Come with me.
Mimsy, why you've come back? I'm dreaming and you've come back to me in my dream.
No, this is no dream, for dreams must end. Gogo, give me your hand.
Then the dream is ended, Mimsy. For life is but a sleep and a fleep and a forgetting. This, Mimsy, this is our awakening, Mimsy.
The curtain of the NBC University Theater falls on another in our series of radio plays based on the world's great stories. Tonight you have heard an adaptation by Jack C. Wilson of the George Du Maurier novel Peter Ibbotson, starring Joseph Schildkraut, eminent star of the stage and screen, with Barbara Fuller as the Duchess of Towers. Others in the cast included Jerry Farber, Anne Whitfield, Rudolph Anders, Charlie Lung, Johnny McGovern, Peter Rankin, Ina Ronsley, and Lester Sharp. We invite you to listen again next week when the NBC University Theater presents The Purloined Letter by Edgar Allan Poe, starring Adolphe Monjou. Music for tonight's production was composed by Albert Harris and conducted by Henry Russell. Your director was Max Hutto. Productions of the NBC University Theater are currently being used in conjunction with a course in American fiction under a College by Radio plan at the University of Louisville. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.